As robots are increasingly integrated into modern society on the battlefield and the road in business, education, and health, those who design the machines have a stark choice to make. They can design systems to enhance the quality of human work and life, or they can design systems that replace humans entirely. Both approaches will reshape the modern world. In the new book, Machines of Loving Grace, The Quest for Common Ground Between Humans and Robots, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter John Markoff explores this issue and searches for an answer to perhaps one of the most important questions of our age. Will these robots help us, or will they replace us? Again, the name of the book is Machines of Loving Grace, and it's a pleasure to welcome journalist John Markoff to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you. What brought you to look at this idea of our relationship, being human beings, our relationship with robots?
Well, over the last couple decades, I did a lot of reporting on personal computing, and I was working on an earlier book, and I saw that at the very dawn of the computer age, the interactive computer age in the early 1960s, there were two laboratories on either side of the Stanford campus. One was run by a man by the name of John McCarthy, and he believed in 1962 that it would take a decade to build a thinking machine to replace humans. And on the other side of campus, there was a lab run by a man by the name of Doug Engelbart, who invented the computer mouse and hypertext that became the World Wide Web. And he was working on tools that would augment humans, make humans more intelligent. And I realized that that you had this choice. You could design people in or you could design people out. And at the same time, we were spending more and more time interacting with these systems that we were building, and they were becoming all of a sudden more human-like. And that led me to focus on the question of the relationship that we might have in the future.
I mean, basically, you can pare it down to the question of will this technology, will robots help us, or will they replace us? We haven't really figured that out yet, have we?
No, I think you can see both things very much alive in the world. You can see the job impact of robots, and then you can see these amazing tools that have begun to spring up everywhere. I mean, I think two classic examples of robots that help us. I have a broad definition of robots. A robot doesn't have to be embodied. It can be just a conversational system in a computer. And, Google Search is a classic example of using technology to help people. I mean, it's given every human on the face of the earth almost the access to the Library of Alexandria. And another good example is the Apple iPhone assistant, Siri, which is a conversational piece of software that will help you do things.
So the point of the book is not to declare a winner, but the point of the book is to find common ground.
Yeah, I thought that it really comes down to the intent of the designers. I mean, one of the things I feel very strongly is that these machines are not designing themselves. They are created by humans, and they are imbued with human values. So the intent of the designers is super important, and I wanted to call that out and basically point out that the designers have a choice in sort of figuring out what the relationship between their machine or their program is and the people who are using it, or whether or not it's designed to basically displace humans or not. That's all a human choice.
You tell many fascinating stories in the book about these designers and these scientists and the people who have created these machines. And I'm curious, because they are such characters, and I would think writing about them would be fascinating. Do you feel that in interviewing them and talking to them and writing about them, that they understand the power they have?
Yeah, I found both to be true. Some of the researchers, particularly in the AI field, tend to discount these problems. I mean, I had people say that, you know, you just have to sort of be confident in what you're doing and assume that this will sort of work out for the best. On the other hand, you know, I was struck by sort of encountering a number of people who actually made the choice to leave the AI field and move over to what is thought of as IA, intelligence amplification. I put Siri into and the Google search tool into that case, but I ran into people who intentionally left one and went to the other, that really thought it was important to build their systems with the human being in the center, and they had thought deeply about it.
AI, of course, being artificial intelligence, what does that word artificial tell us about this whole project and how we perceive it?
There are a number of levels. I mean, artificial intelligence is a broad field. I place robotics within it, so you can sort of think of it as all the qualities and capabilities that humans have, being able to mimic them or to simulate them with computers or robots. You know, there is a school that believes still that you will be able to build very intelligent machines. I think it's thought of as strong AI. It's described as strong AI or artificial general intelligence. That is a machine that actually can be self-aware and do all the things that humans can do, perhaps maybe even be super intelligent. There are people who believe that computing is evolving quickly enough that the machines will surpass us at some point, and that's become, of course, a big talking point in society.
Tell me a little bit about the title, Machines of Loving Grace.
So, you know, like many people from my generation, I went to school in the 60s. We went through a Brodigan phase. There's a poet by the name of Richard Brodigan.
Sure.
And Brodigan, one of the poems he wrote is titled All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace. And I've always liked the poem. I stumbled across it in the 1980s, and I had used it in the flyleaf of my manuscript, and my editor said, you know, that's obviously the title of your book. And just a little bit more background, there is a Brodigan biography, but I haven't actually found out specifically why he wrote the poem yet or what led him to sort of that thought. But what I do know is that he, in 1967, was the poet in residence at Caltech. And while he was there, he spent an evening with Richard Feynman, the Nobel laureate physicist. So I think that it might be wrapped up in that experience.
How do you feel that it is applicable to what you are writing about?
Well, I came to realize that in designing these systems, that we have a choice of whether we design these machines to be, you know, they could be slaves, they could be partners, or they could be masters. And that is a design question. And, you know, I've come to think that it is very important that we design these systems as our partners rather than as either masters or slaves. And that's the context that I think that the poem is appropriate.
In looking at this, you write this in the preface to the book that Norbert Wiener issued a warning about the potential of automation. We can be humble and live a good life with the aid of the machines, or we can be arrogant and die, and you say it's still a fair warning. And I'm curious, it's just a way of asking you, what is our time frame? What is too late? Given that we have been with technology for so long and yet it continues to amaze us, is there a point where we have an expiration date?
You know, what's our expiration date? You know, I think the answer is it depends a lot on what we do with these machines. For example, there is a group of people in Silicon Valley who now believe that the machines are evolving fast enough and their performance is accelerating such that they will perhaps be able to perform all human tasks in the workplace by 2045. I've come to think that that's wildly optimistic, that there is a class of things that we do that are relatively routine that machines will do, so there are real concerns. But there are other things that will take much longer. For example, a lot of people believe that self-driving cars are just around the corner. And I think, rather, that there are many things that we will be able to automate in driving, but that we will not be able to take the driver completely out of the car in normal, everyday driving for the foreseeable future.
Several times throughout our conversation, and you mentioned it in the book quite a few times as well, is that there is a debate in Silicon Valley. There is a debate over this particular issue and that particular issue. Is that debate process good? Is that healthy?
I actually think it's really essential. You know, recently people like Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates and others have raised the possibility that this technology might be an existential threat to the human species. And I actually feel that that's probably overestimating the progress that they're going to make. And indeed, the AI field has for decades overpromised and underdelivered. So there's not evidence that things are imminent. However, increasingly we're able to make these machines autonomous, if not self-aware. And so I think that it is really good to have a debate about what kind of, you know, limits or how we might think about design if the machines are going to be able to make decisions. For example, we can make autonomous weapons now, and that makes it possible to create weapon systems that make killing decisions. That's starting to happen in the world. And, you know, once again, there's an active debate about whether that will make warfare safer or more dangerous. It's an important debate to have.
You point out in the book, I mean, there's some chilling elements to this of what is possible, and as you just mentioned, of these minds who feel that, you know, we should be a little nervous here. And yet, when you close the book, I think you come out, at least I did, of being fairly hopeful.
Yeah, I am hopeful, actually. I mean, because I've seen what sort of great human designers can do. Let's look at one of the pressing issues in the world that will be more pressing over the next two decades, the issue of an aging population. You know, I've cared for two parents who have now died, and my wife is caring for her father now. And I think there's a possibility that we might be able to use these technologies to help with the care of aging of the elderly in a human way. You know, that's hotly debated. Some people think that if you have robots taking care of human beings, that they're going to be dehumanized. And I think that's a possibility. But I also think it's a possibility to use this technology in a way that protects the dignity of people. And so I think it's worth trying, because I think that, elder care can be very dehumanizing, even when you have humans taking care of humans. So if you had a way of sort of allowing people to keep their independence longer because they had technology to support them, and that would actually be a sort of big step forward for society.
The name of the book is Machines of Loving Grace: The Quest for Common Ground Between Humans and Robots. It is published by Echo. John Markoff, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure, as always.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Machines of Loving Grace. It's published by Echo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.